Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
An author who was born and raised in Marion County and who now lives overseas has written a work of fiction on terrorism titled The Contractor. He's back in town for a visit. Let's go in depth with Charles Holdifer, formerly of Knoxville. Charles, you grew up in Marion County.
Yes, I did. I grew up on a farm about 8 miles out of Knoxville, and so I went to elementary school in Dallas, Iowa, at the start, and then I finished in Knoxville and went to junior high and high school in Knoxville.
And then where did you go from there?
Well, I was a student at the University of Iowa, and then I continued at the University of Iowa and went to the writer's workshop there. And after that, and that would have been in the middle 80s, I moved to France.
What took you to France?
Well, at the time, I was involved with a French woman. So it's that, and I wanted to see what it was like there. So I moved to France. I got some jobs teaching English. I was together with this French woman for a dozen years before that ended. And by then, I'd pretty much started a life there. And so I've continued there as an English teacher and a writer. And I lived in France for a little bit more than 20 years, I would say. And then my current wife, who is Polish, works for the European Union as an interpreter. And recently she got offered some work in Brussels. So now our main base is in Brussels, though my job is in France. So I commute on trains and I spend a lot of time reading and writing on trains.
Reading and writing on trains.
Yes.
Okay, and then you were back this summer to teach at the Iowa's Writers' Workshop and to visit your family here.
Yes. Actually, I come back every summer, so although I've been far away, I do get back every summer. That's one of the advantages of being a teacher. I do have some of these longer breaks, and so I've stayed in touch, and I teach in the Iowa Summer Writing Festival in Iowa City, generally, and then I always get back to Knoxville. My parents still live on the farm about 8 miles from here.
What started your writing career? Did something in Marion County, something at home, something in school?
Maybe it was just sort of gradual as a kid. Actually living on the farm, books were a kind of, I enjoyed living on the farm, but books were also sort of a mental escape, a way to visit other places. I can remember when, for instance, when I was a kid and being sick and off school and my mother reading aloud Island of the Blue Dolphins or Secret of the Andes or, you know, stories like that, which just, you know, made me dream a bit. And the, you know, the public library here is a good public library, and that was always a real important asset in Knoxville. And so and in terms of being a writer, I suppose in some ways it's just a continuation of that words are a source of pleasure, stories are a source of pleasure. And so after a certain point, you start dabbling in it yourself a little bit and seeing what you can do. And so that's what I've tried to do. I mean, it hasn't been easy particularly, but I'm glad I've tried to be a writer. It's helped me see certain things better, and it's been a good life.
How does writing help you see better?
Actually, yeah. How do I explain that? Well, it's like I do think putting things into language helps make sense of the world. If you, you know, if you ask a person what's 6 times 5, they can do it in their head and tell you the answer. If you ask a person what's 642 times 527, unless there's some kind of prodigy, they're not going to come up with it just as a mental process. It helps to write things out, and if because you can easily do that with a pencil and paper if you want to. I don't know if that's the best analogy, really, but I think writing is a process. It's a process of discovery, and when you start telling stories, the pleasure of telling a story also helps you make some sense out of the world, I think.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with author Charles Holdafer. And you've written a number of novels and short stories and,
yeah,
and other writings, essays, book reviews, etc.
Yeah, I've written three novels. I'll have one come out next year. And I've written short stories and some poetry. And lately I've been doing some reviews, which I enjoy. The problem with a novel is it's a long process, and sometimes it seems it's never going to end, whereas a shorter piece, you can actually finish it. And that's a source of satisfaction.
Well, your most recent novel, the one that is out, not the one that's going to be coming out, deals with issues of terrorism, and it came out right when that was really getting a lot of attention.
Yeah, and that was kind of a coincidence in a way, and more specifically, it dealt with the American policies about Guantanamo and black sites and the treatment of suspects in what's been called the War on Terror. And when I first started writing about that, it was less, I might say, really, it was a little bit less on the radar, but I was intrigued. And then, because it takes a couple of years to write a book, and then when that got a little bit more media attention, by coincidence, that's when the book was coming out. So but those things are a bit by chance. I mean, other things, you know, you write a story and I don't regret anything I've written, but often, you know, you write something and then it's just then you move on to the next thing. It doesn't necessarily get noticed very much.
Share the title with us.
Oh, it's The Contractor, and more specifically, it's about how the U.S. government has used private contractors to a much greater extent in the military than they used to. For instance, in the first, I mean, they've always used contractors. That's just a historical legacy, but it's changed radically. In the Persian Gulf War, when they had about and that's 1991, when they had about 540,000 troops, they only had about 9,000 contractors. Well, at the height of the war in Iraq, most recently, they actually, now there's the drawdown, but a few years ago, they had more civilian contractors than they actually had American military personnel. They had over 200,000.
Well, how did you learn about that world without being a contractor yourself?
Well, there's research involved, I was coming at it from the angle of a fiction writer, and that has its pros and it has its cons. I think nonfiction is extremely important, and I have great respect for good journalists. The advantage of fiction, though, is that it can go in someone's head. It's more about how certain events feel and as history is unfolding. And the way this book started was, like a lot of people, I was a bit taken aback by the photos that were released from Abu Ghraib about what's been called the prisoner abuse scandal. And that's something which I think most of us have heard about. I won't go into great detail about that here. But there was one particular photo which depicted a couple of the people from the guard with holding up a dead body. I think it was Charles Grainer and Sabrina Harmon. And this was the body of a prisoner, and this it was revealed, actually, they were not implicated in this prisoner's death, but he was referred to in the media as the Iceman because his body had been kept on ice. And it was later revealed and confirmed by U.S. military sources, such as the Taguba report, that this prisoner had died under interrogation by an OGA, which means other governmental authority, which is generally an allusion to the CIA, and also by a private contractor. And so the prisoner's name happens, it's worth saying, is Manidel Ajimadi, who was actually tortured to death. Now, this is a small piece in a very large puzzle. I don't presume to tell the entire story, but this got me thinking. And if anyone reads my book, The Contractor, there is an allusion, or it does figure in the story, this idea of having a frozen body on ice, the body of a prisoner on ice and not knowing what to do with it because it creates lots of awkward questions. And as a novelist, I thought this was a very interesting question to explore.
The book deals with the person's reaction to that death, and that's pretty much mind work. There's not a lot of nonfiction that would deal with that. The fiction writer can probably go beyond what a nonfiction person would do in exploring that.
That can be the case. The fiction writer has, again, with all due respect to historians, which that's extremely important not to confuse the two, I think a fiction writer can take advantage of certain liberties. And there have been actually some interrogators, a guy named Eric Fair, who's published a book, a guy named Chris Mackey who's published a book. The Mackey book was out before mine, but it was nonfiction. Other works came out a little bit later. And so there's a conversation going on right now about those issues. And it's more muted now because that was a few years ago. But I honestly don't think we've sorted it out. And I would like to think that people will continue to try to understand these questions better.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with author Charles Holdafer. Do you have a short piece that you could read for us?
Yeah, sure. And maybe something a bit more, I guess what I was just describing was sounds, you know, rather serious. Maybe something a little bit lighter. And it's also a little bit tricky on the radio when you have limited amount of time. So I'm just going to read something short. It's an excerpt from something that I'm working on that'll come out in the future, I hope. But I think it makes for a self-contained episode. A lot of what I like to try to do are kind of family-based stories or family lore about how people talk and retell stories and try to make sense out of things. And this is something from a child's point of view. Okay, so here we go. Was there ever a boy so earnest? In short pants with an oversized cowlick on his forehead, Stevie actually looked like a question mark. One day, Uncle Wayne took him up to his mother's attic and showed him a large trunk. When Stevie asked what was inside, Uncle Wayne said, an old Indian, a medicine man. He'd bought the whole souvenir kit from a traveling Wild West show a long time ago. The body was supposedly well-preserved by some long-forgotten Indian technique using wild roots and extracts from muskrats. I'll give it to you, he said. Gee. Stevie nodded and felt excited, though he had no idea what he'd do with it. An Indian of his own. Uncle Wayne put an arm around him and led him downstairs. It's a secret, he said. Just between you and me, pal. Don't tell anybody. Promise? Stevie promised not to tell anyone that they had a medicine man in a trunk in their attic. For weeks thereafter, he begged Uncle Wayne to unlock the trunk and let him have a look inside. But Uncle Wayne refused. No, 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 that's where he belongs. But why? It's a secret. This answer didn't satisfy Stevie, and one day Uncle Wayne interrupted his pestering by saying, Lay off, pal. I'll show you something even better. Follow me. This time, Uncle Wayne took Stevie to the bathroom, where he reached up high in the medicine cabinet and pulled down an old tube of toothpaste. It was rolled up from the end and bunched and compacted and resembled a snail. Uncle Wayne unscrewed the cap and then handed the gnarled tube to Stevie. Squeeze some out, he said. Stevie tried, pressing his thumbs, but nothing emerged. There's not any left, he said. Uncle Wayne frowned. Sure there is. Come on, take some. So Stevie tried harder. He pressed and squeezed and worked the tube until his finger joints felt as if they would snap, but nothing came out. Uncle Wayne held out his hand, shaking his head. Stevie returned the tube. You can always get a little bit more if you try hard enough, Uncle Wayne said. It's a question of attitude. With his big thumbs, Uncle Wayne began to massage the tube. He pushed. He kneaded.
I've used this one all my life, and my father used it before me. His father, too. Some things... He paused and his face reddened as he bore down, and suddenly a minuscule aqua squib emerged. Some things are eternal. With his fingertip, he wiped off the squib, displayed it in the air as if for a larger audience, and then slowly, deliberately, brought the fruit of his efforts to the tip of his tongue. It disappeared. Someday, he said, this tube will be yours, too. Traces of blue were visible on his uncle's teeth as if he'd bitten off a piece of the sky. Gee, Stevie said, but more dutifully this time, because before the medicine cabinet was even closed, he began to feel cheated and started thinking about the Indian again. That's what really interested him. It was hard to get excited about an old tube of toothpaste. You gotta be stronger, his uncle said. You're gonna learn. Stevie nodded, but his doubts began to form in the back of his mind. What if the toothpaste was only a diversion? What if there wasn't an Indian? Not really. What if everything he heard was really made up? A story. Stevie regretted such thoughts. After all, why would Uncle Wayne lie to him? What was the purpose? Stevie was dearly fond of the man for the very reason that his uncle cared enough to share secrets with him, special secrets that shed light on the world. Then, one day, Uncle Wayne surprised him. It happened on a sunny afternoon in the backyard when he was hosing smashed bugs off the front grill of his Mercury. A rag in his other hand, he whistled and polished the chrome. He looked down at Stevie. I've been thinking about what you're asking me. You know, what you wanted to see? Stevie drew closer. What you say you and me go up and have ourselves a little look? Stevie could hardly believe his ears. He stammered. Why, sure. The Mercury's grill dripped and grinned. Uncle Wayne tucked the rag into his belt and twisted the hose's nozzle to silence. He went first, tromped up the back steps all the way to the top of the stairwell. In the upper landing, there was a cut rectangle in the ceiling, a removable panel that allowed for a passage to the attic. In previous weeks, Stevie had gazed up at this place for minutes at a stretch, tilting his head back and wondering, dreaming, once for so long that he became dizzy and almost fell backward down the stairs. Now Uncle Wayne raised himself on his toes, reached his fingertips up to the rectangle, sliding the panel aside, and then, with a silence and precision which thrilled Stevie, a set of retractable steps came down. "Go ahead," Uncle Wayne said, beckoning for him to ascend first. Stevie lifted his foot and felt his uncle's steadying hand beside him. "Not too fast," he added. The vaguely oaty smell in the air and the pinpricks of light that had fascinated Stevie on his earlier visit held no interest for him today. He cared only for the trunk and ran across the plank floor to it. "Come on, come on, open it," he said impatiently. Uncle Wayne knelt down and busied himself with his straps and snaps, while Stevie rocked his weight from one foot to another. Then Uncle Wayne threw open the lid. But the trunk was empty. Stevie drew closer, peering inside. Nothing. Then came a tap on his shoulder. When he looked up, his uncle was trembling, running a hand over the top of his head, glancing to either side of him. "Stevie, I hate to say it, but I think he's escaped. He's come back alive." Uncle Wayne gasped and pointed. In the middle of the floor, in plain sight, lay a feather. "We'd better get out of here."
That's great. What inspired you to do that?
I don't know. It's just kind of maybe it's just kind of like an old family practical joke, and then thinking of spinning off on that more and having more fun with it. And, you know, there are lots of similarities between jokes and stories. You know, you have the setup, you have the... Then you have the confirmation, then you have the reversal in lots of jokes, or the punchline. With a story, you do need to string it out more, and you insert some other elements. But you know, a lot of the structure is quite similar.
And where can people find your work?
In good bookstores like The Next Chapter, and also on the internet. I have a website which has links, and on the major. Internet distributors or in bookstores like Prairie Lights here in Iowa, they carry it too.
Thanks to Charles Holdifer for contributing to the program. For KNIA, KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In-Depth is available for podcast in the Radio Audio Media Player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In-Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In-Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.